voices.
Your voice is very sexy today. It's almost as if you're starting rehearsals for a new show just off Broadway called The King of the Juice. Pulp free.
You are, do you, yes, King of the Juice. Oh, Bobby's asking, can we hear you? I'm going to tell
him. We cannot hear
yet.
Bobby until we let him in.
We need to let you in, Bobby. Stand by.
The King of the Juice, the O.J. Simpson story.
Yeah, do you, check your gain, Matt. Turn your gain down a little bit.
Is that any better?
When your volume goes up, it's rattling a bit.
How is this any better?
Yeah, talk. Hey, one, two, three.
One, two, three. Exit stage left even. Am I better?
Yeah, it's amazing how we actually haven't recorded in a couple weeks, and we'll bring in our guest in just a second. I know he's chomping at the bit, but it's funny that you're picking up on my voice change because, you know, I've been at it full swing ahead in the theater for, you know, 2 weeks and working those muscles.
The funny thing is I can hear the way you pronounce theater as if you spelled it T-H-E-A-T-R-E. Like a fancy person. Theater.
And why do you sound like you are you're a voiceover guy?
I feel like now we're both such high profile entertainers.
Yeah. And I hope for real that Bobby Shanes is wearing a blue shirt because we didn't plan this. But for those of you who are watching, we're wearing almost similar, exactly same shirt.
Am I wearing something blue?
I don't know. Yeah, you're challenged in the color department.
I'm challenged in color.
But not in black and white.
No, I see that there are colors. I just don't identify all of them.
What color shirt do you think I'm wearing?
Well, you said blue.
But okay.
I would not have guessed blue. I would have guessed like gray. Or like a gray blue, maybe something.
I think that's and I think that's because my daughter's lamp here is sort of an orangey glow, which is probably changing the color of whatever.
You should blame it on your daughter. I think that that's one of the things that I like to do is blame everything that goes wrong on my kids.
You sent me a photo the other day. You texted a photo of your daughter having a play date. I don't know, at 13, 14. If you
cringy.
Call it play
no,
date.
We don't call it play dates. No.
You had apparently 400.
So I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you what happened. My daughter is obsessed with her summer camp friends. They see each other every weekend. Somebody hosts something. Our pool, which we have talked about here before, got closed today. So as a last hurrah, over the weekend she wanted to host her friends, and so this is what I was told. This is how it goes. I was told that I had to do the following. This was, I believe the conversation was Thursday night of last week. She said, "Dad, here's what's going to happen. Friday night, we're going to go to such and such's house, one of the guys. And then one of the girls' moms was going to pick them up and bring them to the girls' house where they would sleep over. The following morning, the mom would bring the girls to a brunch place where they would meet up with other camp friends and they would all have brunch. Then is when I would come into it. Dad, you will pick us up at 2:30. And by us, I mean me and six of my friends. They will come back to our house where we will hang out until 5 o'clock. And that's when the boys will arrive. And
oh my God.
Then the boys will be here until around 11 o'clock. And then the boys will leave and the girls will get picked up by a different mother and bring them back to the different friend's house where they would sleep over again. And by the way, could we get food for everybody? So
the only...
Yeah. That
the
was
the only
it was,
question.
Yeah.
To you as the parent of the hostess is, can we be fed? Everything
Correct.
Else was a demand.
Correct. And do you know what we fed them? I'll tell you.
Think wisely because I'm going to judge if it's
No. Here's what it was, and I'll tell you, they were excited. I ordered Chick-fil-A catering. Like 200 nuggets and a vat of mac and cheese from Chick-fil-A. And I brought it out to the pool where they went crazy as if they had just gotten voted off Survivor and they could not wait to get to the Ponderosa to eat for the first time. They were so excited about hundreds of chicken nuggets and a vat of mac and cheese. That's what they ate.
Because what they didn't reveal to you is that they all were high as a motherfucking kite.
They were very high. No, it's actually a very sweet group of people. And
I'm just kidding. Oh, wait, pot smokers aren't sweet people? Come on.
No, that's a good point. No, but they are. It was pretty wild. So the picture I sent you was seven pairs of exactly the same white sneakers.
Yeah.
Because as soon as the girls got to the house, they all took their shoes off and threw them at the front door. And it was like shoe scramble. I mean, I am convinced some of them went home with someone else's shoes. And the reason I know it, because I will tell you something that happened.
You seem angry about this, by the way.
It was because it was just like the whole time I sort of felt like I'm just along for the ride and I'll just wait here until somebody tells me what to do. This whole thing happened between Friday night to Sunday morning. Yesterday, at the time of this recording, yesterday was Sunday. And yesterday, two separate times, one of the girls who had been here on Saturday showed up at the house unannounced to pick something up that she had left here Saturday.
Oh my God. What is happening in Massachusetts?
It's like...
And where is your wife during all of this, by the way?
She was around, but I was giving her some time off and I was like, I will go get the Chick-fil-A thousands of nuggets. And she was shopping with my other daughter at the time when I had to go pick up the seven girls at the brunch place. So it was all good.
That's an incredible thing. And I'm wondering, do you at that point, because, you know, my daughter is, you know, 5 years away from this. When Bobby comes on, he's listening. Bobby could sort of chime in with his sort of tween. I think his kids are, if I'm not mistaken, maybe 11 and 8, 9 and 12. I'm not sure. And he'll chime in on this too. But do you Venmo the parents? You're like, hey, I just spent $600. I'm just kidding. You wouldn't do that because, you know, I'm sure what comes around goes around.
I think
no one has this amazing pool in PB.
Well, but they do different. Every weekend they're somewhere. And so presumably they are being hosted by somebody. And so it is sort of like it was our turn. And so I could have gotten pizza and that would have been fine. It would have been less expensive, but they were really excited about the Chick-fil-A.
Well, I like Chick-fil-A. I don't support their politics, obviously.
Agreed.
I don't know if their politics have changed, but this is not a plug for Chick-fil-A. But if Chick-fil-A wants to throw money at a couple of Jews, that's fine with us.
Or nuggets. A lifetime supply of nuggets. Should we let Bobby in?
Let's let Bobby in, ladies and gentlemen. Here she is.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Hey, Bobby.
Bobby Shaines, as I live and breathe.
Yeah, can you hear us, Bobby?
Can we hear us? I can see you fine.
We heard you right away, and then we didn't.
All right, hang on. How about now?
We got it.
All right,
you're in, and you look great.
Oh, thank you. I'm not wearing blue, but I'm wearing a tie dye. I thought,
but that is blue. See, he is wearing blue. Did you change? You probably changed when you heard the little intro, and you were thinking you had to go change.
Don't ever change, Bobby.
Matt, Bobby, Matt. You were all three Jews and a fountain.
Three Jews and a dad pod.
I love it.
Welcome to Dad Pod, man.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, man.
So, do you want to chime in? Were you listening to that sort of like anecdotal nightmare of a dad story that Matt was talking about? Matt has I don't know if you know a 13 and a 14,
14 and 15.
I never get it right. Last time I said 15, 16.
Though. Yeah.
It's 14, 15. 14, 15. 14, 15. They're not Irish.
No.
Bobby. Yeah. Bobby's got two kids.
I got a 12-year-old boy and a 9-year-old girl. So, Matt, you're You definitely are ahead of me.
Am I?
I think you've probably gone through a lot of what I already went through.
But... No boys in this house, though, so you win.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I think girls are definitely easier. At least that's the way it's been so far. But, you know, it's funny in L.A., I don't know, like there's this strange understanding. You guys talked about food, you know, where you have people over for food or whatever. But in my case, since I'm in a situation where I'm a single dad, so I'm alone with the kids all the time. My daughter will ask her friends to come over. And then I get the call from the mom like, hey, my daughter wants to come over and play. You know, can I have your, you know, are you going to be there or is your female companion, you know, wife going to be there, whoever? And I explain my situation and I usually get the text back and says, you know, maybe it's best that she comes over to our house.
like there's,
you know, some kind of hint of, you know, possibly too much testosterone in the house because me and my son are here, I guess. So it's been a little bit strange the last couple of years with that. And Nadia will often ask me, like, why don't we have any of my girlfriends have sleepovers at our house? Why do I always have to sleep at their house?
That's the 9-year-old, right? Nadia's the
That's 9-year-old. The 9-year-old, my daughter, yeah. So that's been a little bit strange, I have to say, the last couple of years. And I usually have to call the parents, like, I'm nice. Nothing terrible is going to happen. It's okay. We'll feed them and make sure they stay safe. But because there's another boy in the house, my son, a 12-year-old, I think they get a little bit guarded. But, you know.
Yeah. I wonder if that's something that, Matt, I wonder, you know, we'll play a little, I'm completely out of this variable at the moment. But, Matt, if you were... Your kids were to be invited over to, say, Bobby's place when they were 9 and they only had an older brother and not a mother figure around. I don't know, Matt, I've known you for many, many years. I've known Matt for 30 years, but I can't presume that you would say, oh, you know, this is, I'm going to, maybe they should come over here. What do you think?
So I would prefer that they go somewhere else. So it's worth a gamble. No, I think that it's an interesting thing, the sort of double standard and generalization. And I am cognizant of it even now to never put myself I didn't create it, but it was like, let's say I assume I know Bobby in that situation. And if I know that Bobby is cool and safe, then I'd be cool with it. In the same way that if Bobby were a woman, I would want to know that he was or she was cool and safe. And I don't care if it's a man or a woman. I want to know who the parent is before I send my kid there.
Yeah, I mean, one of the issues was one of the parents came over and saw we have a stripper pole in the living room. You know, and I think
do you really?
I think that threw off her parents a little bit, like wondering what, you know, kind of activities were. No, it's when we have like a nice Shabbat dinner with the family first and they come over and see, like, you know, I make a good brisket. Usually it alleviates some of the concerns, but yeah, it's been interesting in LA. Like, people are a little bit, maybe just a little more guarded. I think I grew up in Chicago. They probably wouldn't have cared so much. But
so what do you actually say when that, do you just say, sure, they can go?
She can go. Yeah, I don't fight it. I just sort of say, I don't say I understand your concern with two men in the house or something like that. I don't shine a big fucking light on it. I just sort of say, okay, whatever you're more comfortable with, I get it. You know, she just wants to have a play date with your daughter. It's you know, whatever works for you. It's funny, even with the boy, though, that's even funnier now that he's 12 and I'm sure your daughter's, you know, a little bit older. Dave, your daughter's too young for this, hopefully. But Lev is at a point now that he's interested in girls, and girls are really interested in him, which is funny. Because like 6 months ago, he couldn't get the time of day and he goes off to sixth grade and suddenly all these middle school kids are asking for his phone number, which has been very entertaining.
How does that feel as a dad? You know, Matt and I will never experience this, having girls.
I mean, it's a combination of fear and pride, you know, all blended together. But, you know, because he's a little kid inside, but he's physically getting bigger. You know, it's, you know, what happened after he came back from summer break, because he was, you know, he went from fifth grade, where it was a K through five, he was the oldest kid in the school, and we held him back here. So he really was one of the oldest kids in the school. And, you know, girls are little girls at that point, right? And suddenly he goes to middle school and they're filled with 13, 14-year-old kids. And literally within the first week, you know, he's got a cool earring and the dyed hair and he's a good-looking kid. And suddenly girls are noticing him, like out of nowhere. You know, he suddenly gets noticed. So the first week he comes home, he says, "Dad, like seven different girls asked me for their phone number. I don't know what to do." And the advice I gave him was, take it, take their number. You can be friends with anybody. You know, it's okay to be friends. Like, you don't have to do anything about it.
Does Lev have a mobile phone at this point?
He has a smartphone. Which I regret giving him last year, and I gave my daughter one at the same time, because their mom lives in Portland, you know, out of the state. And I wanted them to be able to FaceTime with their mom every day if they want to. Yeah. So it was one of those, like, I hate smartphones. I hate technology for kids. It's so addictive and dangerous, but it's inevitable. And we, you know, I don't know. I don't curse Steve Jobs. I mean, you know, it's a tricky one, right? I don't know. Do you guys give your kids smartphones, or, you know, I don't know if that's something you've avoided, Matt?
Girls have, yeah. It would be, we have rules still, but it would be, I don't know how we would sort of get by with their social agendas without it.
Well, yeah, and I'm curious about, like, what's funny, I think, going just rewind for a second for Bobby's story. I think it's, I don't know if you're being like hyperbolic or sort of embellishing story of, like, all asking them for the telephone. So they're asking Lev for the telephone number. I would think at 13, probably, hey, what's your
Instagram,
Instagram thing? What's that called? Yeah. We're getting old.
Yeah.
What's your handle? That's where I think it can get really, that's when I think I'm going to get really scared, is when.
Thankfully that hasn't happened. Okay. I mean, Lev, to my knowledge, doesn't have any social media presence. He does look at TikTok, which I've never personally looked at because I am old, but, he does like to flip around TikTok and YouTube. But he hasn't connected so much with kids that way. It's been really just texting, but they get into trouble with the texting. Like, I had to take away his phone for a week because of something that was said that I considered to be inappropriate.
By him or by another person?
It's, you know, they're on these group texts, right? And they're all trying to one-up each other, and they don't have any filters because, you know, they say things that, and they don't mean anything by it because they're 12 and 13 years old. But, you know, we live in a very, let's be honest, a very, I guess what we now call a woke, you know, society, and especially in LA, where you got to be careful the things you say to somebody. It could be taken out of context and you could get into trouble. So,
yeah, all about that, my friend.
Yeah. So it was there's a girl that has a crush on him, but there's a guy that has a crush on this girl, and Lev likes the guy, like, wants to be friends with the guy, and he already has sort of his little crush, and he doesn't want the girl to like him. So he said to the girl, "Hey, you know, this other boy, you know, he likes you. You should go out with him. You should date him." Mm-hmm. And she writes back and says, "No." And he says, no, you really should date him. And that was the whole extent of it. But I said, that's sort of bullying. Like, that could be construed. Like, if the father's reading that text, he might look at that and sort of, you know.
How often are you actively looking at his texts, and or do you have that app that can sort of monitor them?
Yeah, I have an iPad that literally mirrors all the text. Okay, so I can see what's being said.
That's important.
And I monitor it, and which is why I caught it, which is why I took away his phone, which he immediately handed to me and said, oh my God, I'm, you know, I don't want to, you know, become a pariah in my school. I said, well, don't, you know, it wasn't that terrible, but it could be misread, and you just want to be careful. You don't want to hurt some girl's feelings or get some parent to be put off by what you say. But it is funny how, you know, these kids grow up so fast, so, you know, before your eyes, like it can happen in just in a week, you know, where they're doing things and saying things that we were not prepared for. And well, I'm not prepared for.
Well, that's when I was sort of going to switch gears. I'm sure Matt seems like you're chiming in. You want to say something, Matt?
No, go ahead.
I was going to chime in, just switch gears for a second, just maybe sort of do a bit of a chat and dialogue on this. I've thought about when we're sort of run the gamut in terms of age differences here, but what were our parents worried about?
On TV. On TV, we would get the knob. You don't remember this. You guys are too young.
No.
Or maybe you do. Yeah, that was like the early iteration of cable. And it was the box. Yeah. And you would play with the knob to try to get the, you know, what soft porn state.
Just the right amount of interference worked out.
Yeah. We had the cable, the first cable box in 82. I remember this clearly. We didn't have HBO or Cinemax, but my brother figured out if you press the number, say it was channel 37, whatever, and kept hitting enter, you get like a blip of the screen. So we would literally sit there pressing the box going, and if you did it fast enough, you could actually watch these like Skinemax movies at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, I don't.
One hand is doing this; the other hand is doing. Exactly. You know what I'm saying?
It's an audio format. I think that my parents are probably like not worried about any of that with me, and if they were, it would have been like, if he wants to make the effort,
good on him.
Yeah. So I don't think that was it. My parents are probably more concerned with, does he have any friends?
Yeah.
And that's sort of it.
There's all right, true story.
Yeah.
So when I was eight, we moved to a house in a suburb called Highland Park, which is now known because of what happened last summer. But anyway, I was just a boring, very vanilla suburb in Chicago. And we had a shopping mall, like everybody, you know, that's like the big center, right? It was like Fast Times at Ridgemont. Like that's where you go to the shopping mall. And it was about two blocks from our house. And that's me. I'm one of five brothers. And me and my older brother at the time used to walk to the mall every day just because we're bored out of our minds. So we'd walk over the mall. At the time, in this shopping mall, they had a tobacco store. I don't know if you guys remember that. They used to have tobacco stores in the shopping malls, which they don't do anymore.
Spent a lot of time there, Bobby.
And in the tobacco stores, what did you have? You had the nudie magazines, right? You'd had Penthouse and it was mostly Penthouse and Playboy at the time. I think Hustler had just come out like in 1978 or 77, but they were up higher up on the racks, you know. Of course, I don't know why, I guess so kids who were going to tobacco stores couldn't get those magazines. I have no idea why kids were hanging out in tobacco stores. But anyhow, me and my brother used to go into the mall, we'd look around, and we finally saw that we went into the tobacco store to buy candy or something, just to go in. And of course the owner let us in at the time. And we noticed these magazines up in the top rack. So I convinced my older brother, who's now a judge, by the way, to go and have this whole crazy scenario where I was going to go get a plastic bag from the shoe store, which I did. I went to Florsheim Shoes and got a plastic bag that I brought into the tobacco store with us. And I said, you be the distraction. You know, you look at like some of the normal magazines like National Geographic while up in the other area to snag a Penthouse, which I'm 8 years old, mind you. I grab a Penthouse, slide it into the plastic bag, and then I put it down my pants, you know, to get out of the store with. And I stole Penthouse magazine. We ran out of the store. No, you know, he never caught us. And we went home with this magazine. Now, this is where the story about parents being worried about what kids are doing, right?
Right.
So I came home on this Saturday with this Penthouse, and my parents were having a big party that night with all the cousins and friends of family and everyone else, big Saturday night party. And there were a bunch of kids from the ages of like 6 to 12, you know, my cousins, my older brother, you know, that was the age range. And I went to all the kids, it was mostly boys in our family, including my brothers. And I said, okay, you'd come to the door in my bedroom. I was going to have the magazine, the Penthouse, underneath my mattress. And there was a whole system we worked out where you had to knock, and it was, that was the code. It was two and then one and then one.
What is this, 1936?
Yeah. And then I knew it was not one of the adults, you know, coming in. And then they'd come into the bedroom, and then I would, it was like, you know, with the underpants from what movie, 16 Candles or whatever, you know, and they'd come in. Candles. Yeah. And I take out the magazine and I would spread it out on my bed and we'd flip through it and they would get about 30 seconds to look at it. And then they'd have to leave and then send the next boy in to go look, you know, at the magazine. So this goes on for about 45 minutes or something. My mom, of course, curious where her 8-year-old son has been all night, like over dinner time, finally comes up to my bedroom and just does like a, you know, and I was so excited to show the next kid. I didn't listen for the secret knock. And I took it out in advance, just thinking I was so tired of like hiding it under the mattress each time. And my mom walks in and Miss, you know, Centerfold 1977 in all of her glory is spread out on my bed. And, you know, my mom's like, what is that? You know, my poor 31-year-old mother or whatever. She was a very young mom. I said, well, nothing. No, it's nothing. We, you know, it starts out with we found it. And then I got it. And then she interrogates me and my older brother separately in two separate bathrooms. And my brother admits to that we stole it. So she was more upset that we stole something than that we stole a penthouse. And the next morning we had to go back to the mall. She brought it out of a brown paper bag and she takes it out in front of everybody. And all the people in the tobacco store start laughing at us.
Vicious.
Horrible, horrible. Like that. And then basically she and my dad sent me down and said, either you can pay for it and we'll give it to you when you're 18. That's choice number one. You know, we got like a nickel a week for our allowance. So you have to save up for the next 10 years, but you can't see it until you're 18, which might as well be 100 years old, or we can return it. And I was like, oh God, they're terrible choices. But we went and, you know, ended up returning it. And anyway, my point of the story is, what are parents worried about in the 1970s and 80s? I guess they're worried that you're going to steal a Penthouse magazine.
Right. I mean, there was no internet for them either. So there was no way to communicate with people either. We're much more afraid now of everything than I think people were back then.
Yeah.
Because we have access to so much more information.
Yeah, it's terrifying. It's terrifying.
But it sounds like you, at least with you and your kids, you lean into it a bit because there's no avoiding it, right?
Yeah, it's usually the carrot and the stick, you know, like you do your homework or you do this, you get to play Roblox. I don't know how to
Roblox. I know I'm familiar Roblox. With it. Yes.
Yeah, it's painful. I've mortgaged my house twice to pay for the fees.
All this.
Roblox, exactly. It's very addictive. And the boy in particular, you know, loves to do it. But yeah, I lean into the sense that I warn them of the trappings of it all the time. We talk a lot about it, about the constant stimulus, you know, Amazon Prime and Netflix and just, you know, TikTok and just the endless deluge of information that they can get so quickly. And I assume it just gets worse, right? Like the older they get. And
it gets both worse and better. Worse in the sense that I assume it's getting worse, better in the sense that I'm getting more ignorant of their activity because they use their savvy and they use things like Snapchat and messages, even though I read my kids' text messages periodically, but Snapchat, the messages disappear and they're all both in high school now. And so there's a greater and greater percentage of their lives that don't involve me.
Yeah.
And so I can't monitor everything the way I used to. And so at some point you take a leap of faith that they are good people, which doesn't mean they're not going to come across things that, that they shouldn't see or things that are going to be confusing. But I have to just assume they're going to see stuff on the internet that's going to be inappropriate for somebody who's 14 or 15 years old. And we're going to just have to talk about it rather than I have to do everything I can to make sure they never see anything that they shouldn't see. Because I can't do that one, but I can do the former.
Yeah, and I'm and then with my 8-year-old, we just literally, ironically, just had this talk on Sunday, yesterday, where I just looked over my iPad And usually she's on YouTube Kids, right? Which is sort of pretty secure. But YouTube itself, she navigated through Google Chrome to regular YouTube. And of course, she's just watching some Pokemon thing. But I looked over her shoulder and it's like the bastardized version of Pokemon with like blood and guns. And I'm like, this is some weird sort of hokey fetish people making these videos that she's being entertained by, but it's subconsciously is really violent. And we had to explain that the real YouTube can navigate you towards these really, really bad things. And so it's hard because she's in this gray zone where she understands what the internet is, but she doesn't understand what the internet is. And that's a hard debate right now. Because she feels like we're punishing her by not letting her go to YouTube, and we're trying to explain there's things in the world there are bad people in the world that want mm-hmm. you to see bad things, and we don't want to go into detail what those things are because she's then say, what bad things are they?
Right. You don't want to expose.
No, I use the example exactly right. I use the example which she understands because we're city kids. She's a city kid. I said, you know how to walk outside, right? Yes. Where do you not walk without looking? The street. Why? Because a car could hit you and hurt you. Right. And so we use that analogy to try to pinpoint why the internet can be good and can be not good.
Mm-hmm.
So that worked because she was able to connect the dots there.
But, have either of you had this thought or discussion or with your kids or other, right? Like recently, I was doing this mental exercise about, and maybe we've talked about it on the podcast, I'm not sure, about the challenges that kids these days face in terms of figuring out what's real and what's true. When the three of us were younger, there were the three TV channels or whatever, right? The news program.
Right.
And it was not political and it was not opinionated. It was the news. And maybe parents got the newspaper or you know, there was no internet. So it was like, this is the news and you could trust it. At least you felt like you could. And now regularly my daughter will come in and say, I heard that Taylor Swift is dating Travis Kelce. And I'm like, where did you hear that? Oh, it's all over TikTok. And so that one is presumably true, but at least half the time, the stuff that they learned is not true, right? It's just somebody like Dave, to your point, it's not like dangerous. It's just not true. It's just people sort of saying things and then it's spreading. And so they have to learn how to consume from all of these different sources and figure out what's real. It's a much greater challenge than we had, I think.
Yeah. I think, I try to tell one of the things I tell my kid, we live in such a faster world now where even as adults, you know, you go out with somebody or you do something with somebody and you send a text and your expectations are within seconds or maybe a few minutes, you will get a reply. There's no leaving a voicemail. There's no, you know, nobody calls anybody and leaves voicemails, right? It's you're going to send a text to get information. So these kids are living this instant gratification, high churn kind of world where information's coming at, to your point, Matt, so quickly and so much, and who knows what's even real and what's not. What I'm always trying to tell my kids is slow the fuck down.
Yeah.
I tell them all the time. I literally had a talk, you know, not to be heavy or something, but Lev was, you know, my son was having a lot of anxiety last night and he was having a hard time going to sleep because there's just so much coming at him all the time. So much information about his mom, about his dad, about life, about school, about these girls, about expectations, about money. He says, I'm worried. I'm not going to be successful. I'm worried. I'm worried. I'm worried. And I slowed him down and I said something, you know, that I heard before, which is just have good thoughts, good words, and good actions, and try to do that every day and slow down. You don't have to react to everybody's comment or everyone's joke or everyone's, you know, in real time. You can just stop. it's funny. I had a friend. It reminds me of a friend from college. I haven't seen him in a long time. I lived with him in college. And he had this strange affect. I don't know if you've ever had friends like this before, where you're just, I'll do a little improv here. Go ahead, Dave. Ask me how the weather is today.
Hey, Bobby, how you doing? How's the weather today?
It's pretty nice. Like, and that's literally the way he would react. Like, it was that weird, and you're waiting for the, because it's this totally, you know, superficial question or comment or observation. But he always had, and by the way, he's brilliant. He's a lawyer. He's very successful. But he had this strange affect where he, whenever you asked him something, he would almost have a stammer before he would say it. It's pretty nice or whatever. And I always, everyone kind of made fun of him for it. And it was a strange affect. But I always appreciated the fact that he was thinking for a second or two before he reacted to anything, whatever choice in life, he had an extra. Can you imagine what you would do in life with an extra 3 seconds before you made a choice? It would change your life. It really would. So, you know, again, not to be so existentialist about it, but I think my kids, and maybe your kids as well, for different reasons, a big challenge they have, particularly my boy with severe ADHD, is he's very impulsive. He needs to react to everything in real time to be funnier, to one up you, you know, and it gets him into trouble, gets us all into trouble, right? And so I don't know. I think internet and cell phone technology and all this, you know, forget 3 channels, 2, 5, and 7. Oh, we had channel 32 Fox at the time, you know, as well for cartoons, but 4 channels, right? And you'd have to wait for what? Commercials. My kid, we went to a hotel a couple months, I don't know, 6 months ago, we were at a hotel and they had regular, you know, television, you know, whatever, CBS or something. And we're watching a show. Neither of them had ever seen CBS ever. They'd never seen a regular program. And we're watching it. And then the show stops after 6 minutes or whatever the TV show was. And then commercials came on. And my daughter looks at Lev, you know, the two of them look at each other and they're like, they're grabbing the remote. Like, how do I turn this? How do I fast forward? How do I fast forward these commercials?
Right.
Like, where's the fast forward button? I said, guys, there's no fast forward. This is live. This is actually happening in real time. They're like, what are these? What are they talking about with sodas and stuff? I'm like, they're called advertisements. Like, they don't even have a clue what an advertisement is. Why do you have that? Why not just fast forward? It's crazy. Right. And so they were very frustrated and I watched and I took the remote away from them because they're trying to flip the channel to try to find a channel without a commercial. And I said, you're going to sit here and watch 3 minutes of these horrible commercials and you're going to sit through them just as an exercise to see if you can tolerate 3 minutes of listening and watching something that you don't want to freaking hear, because it's a good exercise, right? In life, just to slow down a little bit and just listen. And then you get to watch the show again. Don't worry. You know, you'll get to see it again. It'll come back on in 3 minutes. And they were overwhelmed with anxiety.
For the second commercial break?
Yeah, oh my God, terrible. It was horrible.
It did not get better.
No. They were so agitated. They were yelling at me. Why do we have to watch this crap? You know, they one of them wanted to leave. Like, let's just go out. I was like, great. We can go outside instead of watching television. You know, like it was, I thought about when we grew up, like, why did we go play so much outside? It's because we were bored watching TV. Like, how much, you know, Love Boat and Fantasy Island can you really watch?
Yeah, I really wish that our kids could be. I often try to examine moment to moment and say, if ever I see Lila bored, I said, that's a good fucking thing. I read an article like when she was 4, like, let your kids be bored. Let them be bored. Let them figure stuff out. And she'll go, we'll take the iPad away and she'll go in her room. Well, what do I do? She has 1,000. I'm in her room right now. She has 1,000 things she could do.
Right.
So figure it out.
Go for
and
a
that's
walk.
Been helping.
Yeah.
By the way, Bobby, I don't know if I haven't talked to you in a long time, but Lila was also just diagnosed with ADHD and we had her assessed last year. So, it's not extreme, but it's a thing. It's a real thing. And it's you know, she has her 504 at school and which is very helpful and but anyway, noticed when we were running down with when we got the sheet back from the doctor, Cassandra's reading them out, all these things that the doctor ticked, you know, and she looks at me and Lila's in her room or whatever. And she looks at me, she says, Dave, this is you. And then I realized, holy shit. Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm self-diagnosed ADHD. I'm pretty sure.
I'll make it easy. I'll second that.
Wow. And for you too, my friend.
Oh God. Are you kidding me? I've never read a book. Like, I mean, I have some somewhere, but I can't, I'm on page 4 and I'm like, what did I read the first three? I can't remember. Yeah. I was so many different places. I can't read anything besides nonfiction, short little bites of dates and information.
Facts.
Of course I have ADHD.
Right.
Matt, you have something too, right?
Herpes?
But no, I want to say also, besides just that. Side note, Matt, you look like you're ripped. Have you been like, you do, you look like you,
thank
I
you.
Haven't seen you in 2 weeks, but you look like you're.
Well, you know, that's a separate conversation. I'm doing all right in the health department and fitness department, but in terms of ADHD types or things that are on that particular spectrum, yes and no. I mean, I'm a software engineer, so I have obsessive compulsive tendencies, which can be related, but not any sort of ADD or ADHD. Self-diagnosed, at least. Yeah. I actually am very, very good at focusing. I do read books, often multiple books at the same time because I love it. But
you mean you have like 3 books up in front of you and you just go from page 1 to page 1?
I read straight across all 3. No, I read like a nonfiction book at the same time that I'm reading like a science fiction book, and I'll read a chapter of one and then put it down and read another chapter.
And you can remember everything you read when you pick it up the next day.
Yeah,
I'm so envious of that.
I am too. I doubt you have ADHD.
No, I don't think so.
But software engineer, there's probably some OCD tendencies that scratches an itch.
Do you have any, so for 100% with the obsessive compulsive stuff, again, self-diagnosed, and it is a double-edged sword. And there are a lot of challenges, particularly for the people around me with those types of things. But there are also quite a few advantages, I think, and they've made me good at my job. Do you both, either of you, like, have you learned with your self-diagnosed ADHD or ADD, have you learned, when you reflect, have you learned how to harness it to make it like a superpower?
Yeah, I mean, I'll let Dave answer that first for him with his acting and teaching.
Well, it was suggested by a therapist when I was 35, many, many years ago, that I had it. And that she suggested that it can be a powerful thing, because sometimes a lot of artists have some sort of ADD or ADHD, because when it's about you, when it affects you in sort of a dopamine way, you can hyper-focus. And so when I'm acting, my focus is almost... is intense, so much so that in rehearsals sometimes people are talking and I'm just like completely, like, as my daughters say, you know, in the zone, or zoning, you know, I'm there. It's interesting because in my regular life I can't have that focus. It's very interesting. But like Robert De Niro, for example, has severe dyslexia and ADHD apparently, but you can tell that when he's focused, he's just there. His dad was an artist, and his dad would help him focus, would put him on his lap while he painted in his Greenwich Village apartment. But I also know that like what helps me is timers, having like the Apple Watch,
mm-hmm.
and just saying to my watch, a timer 30 minutes. That allows me the brain space and a stress-free period where I can read, or I can clean, or I can do something that I'm not thinking about the next thing, or et cetera, et cetera.
Do you find, Dave, that it's not actually that the timer is going to run out, it's just the setting the timer gives you sets like guardrails?
So
it's
yeah,
like,
it's
I have now constrained myself.
Correct. Because I know my brain says, I don't have to do anything right now except for this.
Right.
And that was, again, the same therapist suggested do an egg timer. At the time, it was an egg timer.
Unstructured time and space for people like us is we are the quintessential, you know, the devil's what's the expression? Devil's hand is the idle hand is the devil's workshop or whatever. Like having unstructured space and time feels like you're falling through the earth, you know, and falling into nothing. The reason, like, I love to clean, for example. I'm not a OCD level clean freak or anything. I don't care about like scrubbing the, you know, the toilet. But keeping my kitchen and my, like my things very organized and very zen in my house, like without clutter. I hate clutter because my brain is full of clutter all the time. You know, I'm constantly, I haven't had a good night's sleep in 30 years, to my knowledge. I really haven't. I haven't had a decent night's sleep in decades. Because in night, my, you know, I'm just going, it doesn't stop. It doesn't suddenly, like most people, they get tired, they shut down and then they recoup. For people with ADHD, at least in my case, it just gets amped up because it's quiet suddenly.
Yeah.
I loved living in New York City. I lived at 12th Street and 4th Avenue, you know, in Union Square. It's, I don't know, a much louder place to live than the middle of Manhattan. You know, it's a pretty busy area by NYU. And I slept better there than I do in my quiet house in LA, because when I'd walk outside or even when I was in my apartment, there was that constant churn, just insanity.
You're like Joe Pesci's character in My Cousin Vinny.
Exactly. Joe Pesci's character in My Cousin Vinny. And that's the truth, is like people, I think we crave that chaos outside because it sort of compresses it in our head. Yeah. And maybe likewise with you with acting, is there's so much going on. Like you said, everyone's trying to do their lines or they're off and the lights are coming on and off. And, you know, all the actors are moving around and you're like, it compresses it all down and you're just in your space doing what feeds you and it calms you down. You know, it sort of creates calm. But having that slow, you know, it's like reading a fiction book, right? It's this 300 pages of unconstructed space where the characters have to be built slowly.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got to learn all the names of the characters that the writer is talking about, as opposed to a almanac, which I keep by my bed, by the way, like a Bible. I've had it since I was a kid. And an almanac is great. It's a 1200 page book, the nice thin paper, you know what I'm talking about? Like a farmer's almanac. And it's just filled with short little nuggets of information about anything and everything you could possibly want to know about.
Yeah.
Like if you're curious about Angola, I could tell you all about Angola or Chad or, you know, the how many radios per population are there in Sudan, like these ridiculous little statistics or dates of, you know, different dates or anything, because it's a short little nugget of information that you can learn very quickly, that makes you feel smarter, that makes you feel more connected. And to, you know, that's, I can see that in my son. I don't know if it's genetic or not, but like, you know, to Dave's point, right? You know, your daughter, her assessment has a similar assessment to, you know, your wife is saying, God, look, this sounds just like you.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it really is. There's some genetic components to it all, I would guess.
I'm sure there is. Yeah. What I'm curious about, a couple things. And, one, the sleeping, because for me now getting older, I haven't slept through the night again, maybe for three or four months, life change stuff, health stuff, but it's just when I wake up and it's usually like at the minute, right at four hours. If I go to bed at like 10:59, I'm up at like 2:59 or whatever. It's fucking insane. And I can't shut it down. I have to either like stand up, get some water. I have Xanax if I need it, but like I have to tell myself, what is my brain doing right now that I can't do in the morning? And when I wake up in the morning, I'm not as panicked. It's like I can deal with it. But right. In the middle of the night, it's like everything that I'm not doing right.
Well, because it's so quiet and you're alone with your thoughts and you're
Matt, tell me.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're annoyed that because you know you want to be sleeping. And so instead of that, I am now annoyed that I'm thinking about these other things. And now I'm thinking about the other thing. And the question I would have, Dave, in that situation is, I am currently in the process of trying to figure out how to get at least 8 hours of sleep at night. And it's challenging. And for me, it's like, I stop eating most nights by 8 o'clock at night.
That helps. Yep.
And in a perfect world, I would stop drinking. I'd love drinking water and I drink a ton of water every day. But if I drink water right up until I go to sleep, I can guarantee I'm going to wake up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. Or
did you know Native Americans actually, if they had to wake up early, they drank a lot of water before they went to bed, apparently.
But like, if you stop drinking earlier too, like what can you possibly do? And a lot of people do meditation right before they go to bed or whatever. Like, what can you do to calm your system prior to putting your head on the pillow to sort of maximize the chances that you won't wake up? Because I think you're right. Like, the anxiety is not a real thing in the middle of the night, because you know, like, when you're rested and when you wake up in the morning, it's not as big a deal as when it's 3 a.m.
Right. But what, but am I wrong? I'm just sort of looking for one.
No,
sort
we
of
all out, do it.
But am I wrong to think like the hyper focusing on my problems, anyone's problems, any adult, any, I'm hyper focusing on it so much that they become there's like life ending problems. Like, I need to lose weight. Okay.
Right.
And so like in the middle of the night, I'm like, why did I fucking eat French fries tonight? Why? Like, I'm in the middle of the night. I'm like, what am I doing? It's like I used to smoke pot. I would get super paranoid. And then I wake up in the morning, like, you know what? I'm going to go for a jog today. It's going to be fine.
Right. But do you wake up? So do you think that it's the problems that are waking you up? Or do you think you're waking up and then you're alone with your thoughts? It's very quiet. And you're like, what should I do? I'm awake. Let me think about things.
Correct. Yep. Exactly right.
So what's the chicken and the
ladder? I think it's the ladder. I think I wake up. First of all, I've been diagnosed as apnea. I'm actually getting my CPAP machine tomorrow.
Congrats.
That's going to help. Number two, I drink alcohol. And drinking, I notice when I'm not, if I don't have like the third scotch, if I stop drinking at 8 or 9 and I go to bed 2 hours later, I have a much better sleep.
Right.
If I'm out with friends, or if I have more than what I'm supposed to have or what I want, that's when it's the worst.
The three deadly sins of bad sleep, all of which I commit because I'm, you know, because of the way I'm wired, I guess, or because I'm a glutton for punishment: alcohol, sugar, and screen time, blue screen, like Netflix or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's massive, the blue screen and the stimulus of the movie, and you know, and it gets you. And I do all three because it's to your point, Matt, the chicken, the egg, or whatever is, you're either, you know, it's 8. First of all, getting my kids to bed at night is like, I should do a reality show on it. It's insane.
You should. I would love to see it.
It's bedtime and wake up time. Those two alone, I got to start filming it. I do have cameras in my house with bad audio quality, you know, those little Ring cameras, but I really should string together some videos in the morning. It's so, or in the evening is even crazier. Because you're dealing with two different kids, different personalities, and trying to, you know, get them showered, get to brush their teeth, not eating snacks, which they're both sugar addicts, and grabbing. And, you know, one wants to be massaged while the other one just wants to be hugged. And, you know, you're jumping between the two bedrooms. And I mean, it's insane. So by the time 9 o'clock rolls around, 9:10 sometimes, which is when they finally stop, it's like, it just stops. And it's like, oh God, they shut the fuck up. Like everything, you know, it's like the book, you know, mm-hmm. They just shut the fuck and go to sleep, whatever. One more little whimper. Can I'm thirsty again, you know, whatever. And you get that down. The last thing you want to do at that point is go, okay, time to take care of me. I'm going to meditate, and I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to watch any Netflix, and I'm not going to drink any booze, and I'm not going to eat cereal. Oh God, do I love cereal before I go to bed every night for 50 years. I know it's terrible. Right. I'm like a big ass bowl of cereal.
What kind of cereal?
I've been on to Fiber One with a little extra sugar because I'm an Ashkenazi Jew that's chronically constipated.
But that's good.
At least like that's better than the Frosted Flakes I ate for 20, 30 years before then.
Yeah.
But like, it's not just but the reality is to go and stop at 9:10 or 9:15 and just go breathe and go, okay, spend 5 minutes in the shower, meditating, just calming your mind, brush your teeth. Don't look at your screen. Don't look at your phone. Don't check your texts. Don't play a video. Don't play a little, you know, Yahoo Hearts or whatever it is mm-hmm. that, you know, pass a little bit of time. Just go to bed and go to sleep at 9:15 or 9:20 or 9:30. And really just, you know, lean, you know, that's your time to go to bed when you don't feel like you've had any time to yourself. Right. The entire, really, other than like when they're in school during the day, if I can get them both to school, I don't have any time to myself ever.
Right.
So the last thing you want to do is just go, okay, God, I finally got them to sleep. And now I have to go to bed. Like, I don't even get to like Watch a movie, watch Rocky 2 for the 700th
time. It's your only quiet time. It's like the time to, it's medication for you.
Yes. It's counterintuitive in the sense of what I do is I spend an hour and a half totally wasting that hour and a half on non-construct, eating cereal, watching Netflix, having a glass of wine, whatever.
Right, but it's relaxing in the moment.
It's relaxing in the moment, and then I get punished for the next 10 hours right. because of it.
Right. Right. Which you could argue, and this is not me trying to pre-training because I have my own things to deal with, but like that, the lack of good sleep then makes the next day that much more chaotic, which makes the need for the medication at the end of the day.
Well, I need my 3 cups of coffee in the morning because I'm exhausted.
Right.
So now I'm wired all day, like false wiring from the caffeine. But then I got to come down from that later at night. So you need that drink to come down, or you need, you do a few lines of Coke and then you take the heroin to bring you
down.
That's it. Yeah.
You know, one of the things that has worked for me, and again, kids are different ages and different stages, but I use on my iPhone, the focus modes. And so at like 9 o'clock every night, the phone automatically, I stop getting notifications unless it's from like my wife or kids. So and you can use those same focus modes, which can start at a specific time, not only to hide notifications with rules, like you can let certain ones through, but also to like change home screens. So like all the apps disappear so there's the temptation, which you can always get to them if you wanted. And it does require like, you have to have mental discipline, but some of that temptation goes away if you just set your phone to do it for you. But for me, when I started exercising, and this is the obsessive compulsive thing, and when I started intermittent fasting, it was cold. All of it was cold turkey. I'm just going to change all of my habits. But people have asked me, particularly recently, like where should they start if they want to do some similar things? And I'm like, just pick one thing. Like, just say like Wednesday nights are going to be the night where at 8 o'clock I stop, I don't drink, and my night is to like open up the Kindle and like read, and I'm not gonna watch TV that night. And because I can watch TV at night, we do all these things, but if I wonder what happens if you do like one day a week where you try to change, like break the habit just once. And then you have it because you need to, it's like chocolate. You got to have the chocolate cake when you want the chocolate cake. You deserve it. Everybody's working hard. So, but like if you did one just to sort of as an experiment to see like how do you feel on Thursday if on Wednesday you go to sleep at a reasonable time and you don't expose yourself to some of those things? I don't know. Everybody's different.
Well, I think, and I'll speak to both of you about this, which is it'll be amazing. And we did just, my wife and I did practiced dry January this past January, and we discussed this together. And when we were at that time, we were actually going to a couples therapist. But it was amazing. We both were enjoying so much more of our lives. And I think what I'm like in Bobby's case, the same way, where I'm like, it's just so like it's so stressful. And I'm like, why don't we just do sober September or right. whatever? Why are we doing this to ourselves? But it's that thing you said, Bobby, and maybe it's because our kids are younger. It's this fucking like, I need at the end. It's like, I love my daughter more than life itself. But when she goes to bed and I sit on the couch, I almost sometimes want to cry because I'm like, now it's my time. And my time is, I love like what the Rat Pack would always say is, I feel bad for people who don't drink because that's when you wake up in the morning, it's the best you're going to feel all day.
Yeah.
I enjoy alcohol.
And you should have it.
And I'm thank goodness. I don't eat late at night, cause that's a different story, but what? Like, I know the key to the castle. I just don't want to go to the castle.
Right. So I guess at some point we all say, we all have goals, micro goals, macro goals, like things that we want to, and you have to ultimately, there's no amount of preaching that will do it. You have to say, do I want to actually achieve the goal or not? And the only way that I'm going to do it is to make a change here or there. And there's no judgment. You either do it or you don't. And that's okay. And as long as you acknowledge, I'm going to live with feeling tired in the morning, or I'm going to live with waking up at 3 a.m. because they would, and that's fine. Whatever you choose, I think is fine.
I should add, by the way, that whole month I slept through the night, by the way.
So, I mean, the science, it makes me a little,
what's
like,
wrong with me?
The science is all, and be clear to the listeners, I understand. So for those who don't know, and Bobby, you probably don't know, I don't like the taste of alcohol and I don't like the taste of coffee. So I don't drink coffee or drink alcohol. So it's a lot easier for me because I don't have those habits to kick. But I did have a huge Coke problem for a number of years, Coca-Cola. And and sugar was a thing for me. And I cut back on a lot of that stuff. And it's made a huge difference in my life. And you hear those stories. I remember, you hear those stories all the time. But ultimately, no one can motivate you to make the changes other than yourself. So, and I'm okay with, I tell people who ask me, and we've talked about this. We had my personal trainer on a while ago. And I was like, there's no competition. I'm not competing with anybody besides myself. So if I have a bad night's sleep tonight because I decide I want to eat some sweet tart ropes that are sitting right behind me, okay. So I'll have a bad sleep. I'll work on it more tomorrow. Right. That's okay. So I don't know. I think this stuff is because everybody always wants to sort of improve their lives. I don't think anybody would say everything's perfect. So I don't, we can just keep working to fix it.
Yeah. I mean, the general approach, like if you go to a meeting, like a 12-step meeting or whatever, is what do they always say? One day at a time. And the prayer that they often say at the beginning is just for today. That's mm-hmm. how it starts, is just for today, I'm going to do X, Y, or Z. I'm going to not do X, Y, or Z. Just for today, I'm not going to drink. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't really have a drinking problem. I don't drink that often in truth, maybe, a couple, 3 days a week. And I have, the readers can't see, I mean, the watch, you can only have this, but it's like a shachta, they say.
It's a gallon. Gallon of vodka. A gallon of vodka.
No, I'll have literally less than a half a glass of wine, less than a half a glass. But I'm, I'm sensitive to it. So maybe it does impact me or affect me a lot. I really, really don't drink that much. My issue is more sugar and caffeine and screen time and things like that.
But makes you happy too. So you have to find a balance. That's you shouldn't.
But it's temporary happiness. To your point earlier, it's temporary happiness. It's happiness in the moment. It's instant gratification. It's feeding your dopamine. It turns you on for that moment. But, in a year, when you don't sleep, you sleep 2-3 hours a night and you're aging and getting bags under your eyes because you're not sleeping enough. Are you really a happier person? Are you a better person? And that's for, to your point, Matt, you have a very Zen attitude. It's for everyone to decide their level of tolerance of, am I willing to be tired or am I willing to be not feel as good about myself? Because those 2 hours last night, I felt pretty damn good. Right. I enjoyed that heaping bowl of Frosted Flakes, is it worth it?
But I think the thing you said earlier, Bobby, about just slowing down, I think is really applicable with this stuff too, is we all have Dave's working, in rehearsals for his play and working, and we're all doing stuff all the time, and you can't solve all the problems all at once. So let's not bother trying is the thing. And so actually, and maybe I'll end up cutting it out, but can I share the we had talked a little bit before about the sort of harnessing the neuroses a little bit, the thing that I do, which, cause I don't, and maybe you'll find this interesting. And again, maybe I'll just cut it out because maybe it's too preachy sounding, but I think that it's worked really well for me, and it might be too abstract, but, so I don't meditate, but I have this mental exercise that I do over and over again throughout the day to sort of balance the obsessive compulsive tendencies that I have. And it actually spawned from a Kevin Costner movie in the 90s called For Love of the Game. He was a pitcher. And so what I do is I sort of imagine myself. If you were, Bobby, you're a baseball fan or a sports fan?
I am. I actually coach my kid in baseball.
All right. So I played Little League baseball when I was younger. I love baseball. But if you sort of imagine yourself on the pitcher's mound, in a stadium filled with people and flat, it's a night game, flash bulbs and the infielders all around you and the batter in the batter's box, all these things. and you're the pitcher and you can hear all the chants and all those things. And then what I do, and they sort of showed this in the movie, but I've sort of turned it into my own thing. I start to almost Photoshop out components of the scene. So first it's muted. So there's no sound, but everybody's there still. And then I remove the crowd and I'm imagining it. I can like see it in my head. And then the infielders are all out. So now it's an empty stadium and I'm there and the catcher's there and the batter's there. And one by one, I slowly paint out all of the different components of the scene. So that's all that's left is just me and the one thing I need to do, which is throw the ball, right? And all of the other environmental things have disappeared. And as soon as you let all that back in, I get overwhelmed by all of the things that I need to do. But if I can manage to paint it all out and just focus on one thing, it's relaxing for me.
You so clearly do not have ADHD. I am now 100% positive. You don't have even a grain of ADHD.
It's hard. I know it's hard to do, but I'm telling you, I do it multiple times a day that I go through that exercise of like trying to concentrate and focus on one thing. And literally, like if I'm sitting in the room that I'm in right now, I will imagine there's a fish tank that you can't see that's over the, like I will imagine that fish tank is not there. Like picture the space without it. Picture the space without any distraction.
Did you see Queen's Gambit, that show on Netflix?
The chess one?
Yeah.
I saw parts of it. I didn't finish it.
She kind of, I like that part. She does that. That's how she kind of, you know, pulls everything out and she plays the game out on a ceiling. Right. It's
yes.
Whatever, yeah, but that's cruel. And, what came to me when he was talking to is Christopher Nolan, a lot of his work, especially,
Inception.
Inception.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where they sort of, everything fell away because it was dreamlike.
Yeah.
Matt, when were you aware of yourself and what you needed to do to sort of practice these, and you know, again, you're lucky that you don't have the aptitude, I guess, if that's a word. No, if you don't, if you, the need or desire for coffee or alcohol. Yeah. But when do you? Now you're 40. What?
Six.
46. How old do you think you were when you were like, I need to start sort of figuring this out for me because it's I'm struggling.
Probably if I had to guess, I would say, I don't know if I could pinpoint a specific moment where it clicked, but I would probably say in high school and college is when it became clear that I had to start coping myself because, like in particularly in college, like there was nobody who was going to help me. Like my parents weren't there. So I was just have to figure out how to do it. And I get anxious to this day. I get anxious in like big crowds and things. Like I had to sort of figure out how to cope. And the way I would do it would be, I always imagine like myself in like movie type situations, but like to like stop, like imagine walking through Times Square. And then I'm just going to like stop like in the center of Times Square and like close my eyes and like take a breath. Right. Shut it all off and then keep going. Like that's what I would do.
So do you grab it? I know Bobby does. And I know I do. It seems like you as well, Matt, gravitate towards humor when you're uncomfortable. Is that just?
Yes.
Is that a Jewish thing or is that just?
It might depends be on how uncomfortable. It depends on what level of uncomfort.
Well, like when we went up to camp in August for the day, and you were like, you were on, and you were like, I've never seen Matt like this. I was like, you were like talking to the kids, and you were
very comfortable there. That's yeah.
Yeah. So if you're in a comfortable environment where you feel like you're safe, whether it's in the woods and at a camp or around your family or whatever, do you find that these practices are not needed where like you're comforted by your environment and therefore you're not needing to do these meditative states?
Sure. But it's always ready. It's always a tool that's with me. And right. So, and it doesn't always work. Like there are times when it's so loud and crazy, or the circumstances are such that like I'm with my kids, I can't like stop what I'm doing and, you know, like take 30 seconds to breathe. It's like, you know, no. As you got to just keep going. You're in the airport and, you know, you're trying to get to your plane before it takes off. Like you don't like, let me just pause for a second and imagine the airport empty. Like it doesn't work that way. But certainly in environments where I feel more comfortable, this is the interesting thing. I feel more comfortable in this environment, so the tools aren't necessary,
mm-hmm.
but they work better. So there's a little bit of a paradox. I don't know you, it's like I've tried, my younger daughter has dealt with a lot of anxiety types of things, and I've tried to teach her this, like this practice. And I mean, ultimately, I can't see what's happening in your head, no, right? Like you have to either try it and imagine it and like see it for yourself or not, or figure out your own things. But what I said to her is like, look, I deal with the same, when I was her age, I dealt with the same neuroses, the same anxieties that she's dealing with. I turned out all right. I've learned the tools that I need to cope. She'll do the same. Your kids will do the same. Everybody, you know, like we all get through. It's just a matter of like how uncomfortable it is to get there.
Yeah.
Which I think it's, you know, uncomfortable often.
You sound so lucid and sober.
I am both of those things. In both of those things.
Well, I think that's kind of why, Bobby, I think that's why I took on this endeavor with Matt when we had this discussion initially, was we balanced this sort of balance. It works really, really well. Yeah. Bobby, what's going on with you in terms of, we'll spend maybe a minute or two. In general, if you have anything you want to plug or talk about.
Oh, I mean, I love being with you guys. You know, I've known you since back in LA days, and you know, you always, it's funny, I just showed a video to Lev of the one that when he's feeding you pickles, you know, when you know, back in the backyard, and just you know, a lot of good memories. But yeah, you know, one of the challenges about ADHD is that you have 800 ideas and hard to execute any of them. I started doing real estate I guess about a year ago, so 2 years ago, I left my day job, you know, when I was clear that I was going to be spending a lot more time with the kids and focusing on their needs, and, you know, being a dad is a big endeavor. And, especially with my kids. So I sort of left the day gig and decided, you know, what do I really enjoy doing? I like working with people. I like real estate. I've always, you know, invested in real estate and I have a good eye for it. And so I got my real estate license in California and joined a little firm. Home Advisor LA, that's my little domain.
Right.
If for people that live in LA, I'm happy to work with anyone. I'm also been doing consulting and coaching, sort of with a couple different firms, a luxury travel company, because I do love travel and got sort of involved with them. They're called Luxury Travel Hackers. Pretty cool company. So I've been doing that mostly, but you know, the reality that I've had is being able to be incredibly present with my kids, just being strong, being present with or without the glass of wine, you know, just being there, being, you know, focused enough to not react or overreact, and getting them from place to place and being strong for my kids, you know, that's the best job in the world. You know,
amen,
that's
brother,
you know, so while they're growing and while they're navigating this difficult time, you know, it was a tough couple of years for them.
Yeah.
I'm sure. I want them to know that they have, you know, they got foundation under their legs. And so that's why I coach my kid's baseball team twice in a row. That's why I'm still assistant coach to his team now. That's why Nadia's doing all of her different, you know, ballet and her acting classes and her this and that and the other. And I run them around and I do all that. And what I didn't do is get a nanny. I mean, I have a babysitter occasionally, but I didn't, you know, bring in somebody 5 days a week or 3 days a week to watch the kids, because I want my kids to know my priority and everything I do and everything I think about is about them. And I use the time that they're at school and occasionally on the weekends when I get a break to do my other endeavors, you know, including hopefully the real estate thing as it starts to, you know, hopefully come back around because the market's a mess. That's been my kind of path, but you know, 2024 is around the corner. Who knows what next year will bring.
Yeah. Bobby, it's been great having you here.
Thanks for taking the time with us, Bobby.
This has been really great. It's like the three of us, I think we sort of work off each other, and it got heady for a minute, but I love that. And I think that, I don't have any regrets. I don't know why.
Bring Jackson back on. Bring Chris back on. He'll wash the taste of heaviness out of our.
Well, that's three people with real lives and real problems and real concerns, and that's good.
Yeah.
Bobby, send my love to your kids. This has been an introduction to us having to talk more.
Indeed.
And you all that sort of concluding stuff that you were saying is eloquent and brilliant, and I'm proud of you, man. I'm proud of
Thanks,
what you. I really am proud of what you have, the challenges that you faced head on, and you are. I just keep doing what you're doing, man. Kids are precious. You're a precious person, and thank you very much.
Thanks, right. Bobby.
Thank you, Bob. Have a good day.
You too, man.
He's great.
Yeah, man. I got a little misty-eyed because I know, you know, we didn't go into it, but it's tough. It's tough.
Yeah, and he's got interesting circumstances, and obviously he cares quite a bit about his kids and is doing a great job, and that it's yet another perspective on parenting, which I think is great.
Yeah. Well, I know that you have to take off. I will we'll chat with you further about what's going on in the future. And thank you, everybody, for listening. This is Dad Pod.
On the count of four.
Okay.
One.
Three.
Four.
Two.
One.
And four. One. Five.